I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Brough.
This is Bro in the Art World Beat, Breaking Glass at Venice 2017. This year's Biennale, the once every 2 year celebration of contemporary art, is bigger, but not necessarily better, than the more overtly politicized 2015 version curated by Okwi Enwizor. This year's event, which is running through November, is curated by the Paris Pompidou Center's Christine Marcel, and represents in many ways a toning down of the more radical orientation of 2 years ago. Enwizor's curated exhibition in the Gardini, the Venetian Gardens, opened with the pavilion in mourning, the entrance draped all in black, for the lingering effects of austerity and the still echoing financial crisis. This year's pavilion, designed by Sam Gilliam, is draped in bright blue and red flags, illustrating Marcel's guiding contention that, in a time of global disorder, art embraces life. There's also quietly here, one of the most feminist, or at any rate, female art festivals ever staged. The mood is not sober or critical and lies a bit outside the realm of more typical art world creation and celebration of celebrity. It's more in touch with earthly goals, as in the documentation of Anne Halperin's Planetary Dance, staged in California's Marin County. It abounds in materials that accentuate women's traditional work, such as the male artist Li Mingwei's Mending Project, that has various threads connecting different parts of the world, and Sheila Hick's Giant Balls of Yarn, that are given pride of place at the end of the long hall of the larger curated exhibition in the Arsenale, Venice's former boatmaking complex. And it is less under the sway of celebrity, featuring of its 120 artists, 103 here for the first time. The Arsenale is itself divided into different pavilions, and the Dionysian Pavilion is an answer to so many years of women's sexuality expressed for the pleasure of men. Here, sexuality is expressed of, often by, and for women. Huguette Calan's vagina etchings have the raw elegance of Egon Schiele's nudes without the commercial vulgarity of Tracy Emin's. French-Algerian Kader Atia's installation first presents a narrow hall where various North African and Middle Eastern female musical artists' records are on display in the more confining way the industry presents them, then opens up into a spacious but dark room with the artists' videos in a way that suggests their inner being beyond the confines of a male recording industry. Only Pauline Kernier-Jardin's sadomaso porn in a digital video cave that hones too closely to the male image of the dominating female mars this foregrounding of female sexuality. The Pavilion of the Earth, in a deep sense, illustrates the continuing rape of the planet and the lust for its raw materials. Julien Charrière from Switzerland highlights the coming gold rush in the new hunt for what is being called white petroleum, the lithium that powers cell phones and will power the electric car, with, by the way, huge deposits discovered under North Korea as the Trump administration makes its bid to stake its claim on them. His drab towers of deposits called future fossil spaces glow from the inside with the eerie bluish light of the mineral. Across the way are the Vietnamese artists Du Van Tran's depleted and mangled rubber trees, which remind us of one of the major reasons for French colonization of that country in the last century's race for its most precious commodity. Next to these, art superstar Gabriel Orozco's more tepid mangled logs, titled Visible Labor, seem languorous and overly convoluted. There is in this Biennale little follow-up to the Nigerian Enwizor's focus on African art, but one of the strongest moments of the Arsenal was the indigenous Inuit artist Kanaginak Putaguk's depictions of that besieged community participating in a whale hunt and accosted in the office of a Canadian Mountie. Marie Vonnier's Safari Memories employs the language of wealthy safari hunters. One talks of clutching a .237 pistol in his belt. Two, as in Ulrike Seidel's film Safari, catch the colonial mentality at work in those hunts, though here the rich, privileged mood of the Euro hunters is much more ominously about power than Seidel's later diluted middle class, following in the wake of this earlier wave. Though there were strong moments, the overall more laid-back and in the end less confrontational mood of this Biennale, whose lackluster title is Viva Arte Viva, easily could move from art as salvation to don't worry, be happy, with balls of yarn as ultimate signifiers, only able to accomplish so much. More could be gleaned from the country pavilions, those relics of a bygone nationalism, which in overall mood, outside the more typical Western powers, might be seen as a whole to propose in the sum total of their individual practices a more universalist answer to the continuing horrors of capitalism than the curated event. In the Arsenale, George's exhibit of a peasant house filled with rain that you could peer into retained a kind of creepiness that suggested Jim's finding of Huck Finn's dead father, but also of the continuing decay of the former Soviet countries in the wake of their neoliberal awakening. This was echoed in the Latvian What Can Go Wrong, where Mikkelis Fieser's etchings of a planetary takeover by space invaders, with the creatures conducting at the Met while dead bodies hang from the curtains and parading up the Champs-Élysées, playfully suggest that in our world ruled by the 1%, the takeover has already occurred. In the apocryphal vein also was Italy's Roberto Conghi's Imitation of Christ, where all kinds of distorted bodies of Christ on the cross suggest past histories of genocide, and a future genocide to come in a Christ captured in a digital oven, which echoes the new finding that within 20 years, almost half of the U.S. population will lose their jobs to automation. The strongest exhibition, though, and the supreme expression of this future terror was Russia's tripartite hall, of first a demon towering over clay workers and a shadowy future that echoed those depicted by Alfero Siqueiros in the fascist period. This is followed in the next room by the writhing body of a woman on whom the modern terror of a fading capitalism is imprinted, and a final brightly lighted room that seems to be the digital answer, but instead has bodies implanted in marble, imprisoned by the digital coating scrawled on the sculpture. The exhibit constituted a truly horrific imagining of our future present, and the world toward which Trump, the Republic neocons, and the Democratic neoliberals are steering us. Colonialism, in both its old and newer forms, is tackled in the New Zealand and Australian pavilions. Lisa Rihanna's diorama, Pursuit of Venus, traces the interaction between the British James Cook's colonizing wave and the more peaceful daily pursuits of the Maori, dancing, jousting, and preparing food, little dreaming of the Holocaust that was to await them. Tracy Moffat equally traces the haunted arrival of Cook in Australia in The White Ships Sailed In, through found footage of an arrival of a boat in the early part of the last century, the colonial equivalent of the Lumiere's arrival of a train at the station. A second film intercuts scenes of shocked actors in Hollywood films, Jimmy Stewart, Doris Day, with arriving refugees, making the star's trauma seem to be about their arrival. Brazil's Hunting Ground, in its first rooms, seems to simply suggest urban decay, but then a video reveals the hunted are those in the favelas, in this most dangerous game of global inequality. Uruguay picks up the theme of colonial brutality in its The Law of the Funnel, where a simple wooden device used to brand cattle suggests the whole colonial system, or jail machine. A sign on the side warned visitors that it was forbidden to jump in, which I guess means that those visitors to the Biennale, oblivious to their own subjugation, cannot wait to be part of it and have been hurtling themselves into the funnel. The Greek Pavilion was the most subtle and narratively involved illustration of technologies of conquest. The pavilion is a labyrinth through which the audience travels, so that on the top floor, there's a white-coated scientist explaining over multiple video screens why experimenting on humans is good for them. The pavilion then ends up with filmed debate over whether the results of the experiment should be used. Clearly drawn from the lost scenario of the Dharma Project, the pavilion was itself a creepy expression of the role of experts in designing technologies that are leaving human concerns behind in a way that the Greek people have been revisioned by the European Central Bank as a country that had to be re-engineered to follow the neoliberal model. There are also a number of exhibitions outside the Biennale this year, as Venice attempts, or rather is driven to, promote more and more of the city as the competition between cities for a shrinking tourist dollar becomes more fierce. So now the backside of the city, called the Duodorso, is being promoted as a museum mile, a name created to describe New York's Upper Fifth Avenue. Spearheading this drive is the VAC Foundation, a joint Moscow-Venice group, which has taken over Palazzo Zattarei and this year transformed the former palace into a three-level celebration of Soviet art at the time of the 1917 revolution, in this year of its centennial, and contemporary art that echoed those principles. I will be talking more about this exhibition and other global exhibitions commemorating the revolution in a later show. But here, in the VAC, was a recreation of the Russian photo collagist Alexander Rodchenko's Workers' Cafeteria, a print of L. Lazitsky's constructivist and geometrical illustration of the Civil War, an attempt by the Western imperial powers to wrest the country from the Soviets, titled Beat the Whites with the Red Wedge, and a soundscape recreation of Vladimir Tatlin's futurist Tower of Babel. Alongside these works were Barbara Kruger's 2015 Kinect, which presents the iPhone as a device for both good and evil, with pleasure on one line being echoed by fraud underneath. David Goldblatt's 1980 photos, collectively titled Going Home, of weary South Africans returning from work and the apartheid machine, and Cao Fei's animation of Marx, Confucius, and Mao kicking around a soccer ball and debating the meaning of a good society in RMB City, his online city of the future, where capital's problems continue to play themselves out. Most interesting exhibit in the city, which you can access online at www.vac.ru. On until the closing of the Biennale are two exhibits which equally extend the critical thrust of the Biennale's country pavilions. The Prada Foundation's The Bogut is Leaking, The Captain Lied has three German artists taking over a palazzo and installing film theater and photographic works that question the direction of late capitalism. The Prada, by the way, at the moment is on the map as its Milan space currently features a virtual reality piece by Alejandro Iñárritu on immigrants that is causing many to, for the first time, consider the aesthetic merits and potential of the form. The film director Alexander Kluge weighs in on the ground floor of this exhibit with a film showing readers of newspapers questioning that content, while photographer Thomas de Man's office spaces radiate alienation, and theater designer Anna Vibruck's set installations equally recall the sterility of justice in a court setting and technological waste as a discarded computer is surrounded by other less mechanical waste. On the whole, unfortunately, the project, while good intention, was difficult to decipher and attempted to cram too much information into a space that was poorly organized and demarcated. Another area of the city that is being developed as an art space is the tiny island of San Giorgio. The Church of San Giorgio Maggiore has been given over to the Italian artist and founder of the movement called Arte Povera, Michelangelo Pistoletto. Arte Povera challenged the dominance in the 60s art world of pop art, positing in its return to materials and in its conceptual frame a consciousness of how commodities had been deformed by capital. We can see this in Pistoletto's early Venus in Rags, where a model recreation of the goddess is dwarfed by the tattered clothes of those too poor to worship at her altar. Today, Pistoletto creates mammoth art designed to, like Viva Arte Viva, overcome differences and point to an art utopia. Sometimes this works, as in his photo posts of Cubans, including the back of a Cuban street sweeper, and sometimes, as in his gigantic projections of the peace symbol of a figure eight, it reads as a combination of Christo's gigantic wrappings and Koch's I'd like to teach the world to sing. Art can teach us to sing, but at this moment, without a notion of discord, our songs too easily reproduce the mindlessness of a world plunging ever more quickly into the abyss. This is Bro in the Art World Beat, Breaking Glass at the Venice Biennale. I'll be back next week with a report on the Venice Film Festival.
Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. His current book, to be published in 2018, is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality, The End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes jazzistiques et artistiques à notre écoute.